Army veteran Alex Bertelli invented the Haven Lock after his experience in the Army's 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. He got the idea based off of how Iraqi insurgents would barricade their doors against U.S. forces. Coming up next, a veteran on the move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
Payroll and benefits are hard, especially when you're a small business. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for modern small businesses. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service to take care of your team. To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive, limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to veteranonthemove.com/gusto. The Cohen Clinics provide counseling for post-9/11 veterans and their families, regardless of discharge status, at no to low cost. Many of the staff are veterans themselves. Learn more about how Cohen Veterans Network can help you make it back to better at veteranonthemove.com/Cohen. Alex Bertelli with Haven Lock. Welcome to Veteran on the Move. Thanks for being here. Before we get to talking about business and entrepreneurship and hearing about this really cool idea that you have, take us back and tell us what you've done in the Army.
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it. I started my military career in 2005 and I graduated from the University of Dayton's ROTC program and got accepted into the aviation branch of the Army and traveled to Fort Rucker, Alabama, where I spent a year and a half learning how to become a helicopter pilot and kind of always had a passion for being at the tip of the spear and submitted a packet to the 160th in my first week in flight school. And kind of long story short of my beginning or my journey into the Army is I got accepted to assess to the unit in 2006. And I traveled up to Fort Campbell, Kentucky and had a positive, successful assessment into the 160th and was assigned right out of flight school to the 160th SOAR at Fort Campbell. So it's awesome. Kind of the beginning part of my Army journey, and I spent my entire military career and the 160th in a variety of roles from leadership, not only at the company platoon level, but at the company plus level, and ended my career as a fully mission qualified commissioned officer and liaison officer to the 160th and external JSOC special operations units.
Cool stuff. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. There's always a Marine Corps Cobra pilot that's doing an exchange tour with Task Force 160th.
Yes, there is. So usually the exchange pilot will either there's one of two options that they usually go through, and 99% of the time it's usually down to a gun company where they fly attack gunships, and then we had a couple guys who did heavy assault lift, which is the primary aircraft I flew overseas, the MH-47 Gulf.
Yeah, so I've known several Cobra guys that have been 160th pilots. And before we started the interview, we definitely know one, Chachi, who's done now, but always heard phenomenal things about 160th, of course. So tell us about your transition out of the Army, because you got out a couple years ago.
Yeah, I was in the unit from 2006 until 2014, and I was fortunate to progress and excel in the unit and came up against a career decision to go to ILE at Maxwell Air Force Base with a follow-on assignment to one of our sister battalions that was either based at Fort Lewis or in Savannah, and kind of came to a crossroads in my career where being selected for early promotion to major meant that I had to choose to move away from kind of the mothership at Fort Campbell. So the family at the time said, hey, look, the best thing for us is to kind of move on from the Army career and focus on building a family and a civilian career. So I made a difficult decision to leave the unit and transition to civilian life. I was very fortunate to get a job lined up before I had exited active duty. So kind of the first thing I did in my search while I was making the difficult decision to leave the unit was to network into different soft groups, not only within the local Nashville area, because that's where we wanted to stay, but also kind of external to the state to see what was available and open. And so I took that kind of as my primary course of action to find a civilian career. And at the same time, I was also pursuing my MBA kind of progression of thought, either at Vanderbilt or Belmont in Nashville, and ultimately decided kind of on two things. One was my network in Nashville kind of landed me a job working for the governor of Tennessee, conducting all of the economic development activities for the aerospace defense and firearms industry. So I didn't really know what the field entailed and what the job was about until I really started getting into it. But there's an entire career field that's dedicated to developing and growing business through public-private partnership and through local, state, and kind of national organizations that help businesses decide to either grow in their local area or relocate to another state to kind of expand and take their business to the next level. So that first track in kind of my strategy was to take on a civilian job, and I transitioned right into that on ETS leave, actually started working while I was on ETS leave, and it was the best, most amazing experience I could have asked for. I traveled all over the world telling people the story of Tennessee and why it was a great place to do business, and at the same time decided to pursue my MBA at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and did both concurrently for about 2.5-3 years. And kind of decided at that point I was either going to go into my entrepreneurial ventures full time or take a corporate career path track. And so that's how I really made my transition. It was having a dedicated thought process to not only getting higher education as well as starting right off in the workforce and earning an income and gaining credibility through an organization that already had an awesome reputation.
Yeah, Tennessee's got a lot of good things going on. I've interviewed several folks, and I see a lot of activity in the veteran entrepreneurial space for doing business in Tennessee and veteran in the state of Tennessee supporting veteran programs and veteran initiatives for business in Tennessee. So good on Tennessee. I mean, it's one of those states that's making it happen. Loving entrepreneurship and loving the veterans getting involved in entrepreneurship. So tell us how... Have you always kind of had the entrepreneurial bug, or did the idea for Havenlock kind of throw you into that?
No, I've always wanted to run my own business, and I always thought that the key to success was developing an idea around a team that could take something to market and be successful with it and not have to rely on, you know, working for another company for the rest of my life and not having a vested interest or a task and purpose that would lead me to the outcome at the end of my life where I've said I've completed something as much so as I did being in the unit. So always wanted to be an entrepreneur and develop this idea while I was overseas. And then kind of as I was transitioning, solidified the idea and built a small team around it. And while I was working my civilian job, took the idea to Kickstarter and have just kind of been working on it ever since.
Awesome. What was the, you said you took the idea to Kickstarter?
Yeah, I took the idea to Kickstarter in August, September timeframe of 2014. So 6 months after I got off active duty, started my civilian job, I was kind of doing this nights and weekends and was following the model and approach of test, iterate, get feedback, see if there's a market opportunity. And now almost 4 years later, I'm still working on it and going strong with a good customer base and some good sales.
What was your, I'm curious because like I took the idea for this podcast to Kickstarter several years ago and they turned me down because they said my idea wasn't creative enough. So I was just curious what your experience with Kickstarter was.
I mean, it was a great idea to take our product to Kickstarter as long as you understand kind of what you're getting into. So really Kickstarter is a great place to go and showcase your idea and see what traction your idea may or may not have and see if it's worth taking on as your life's passion. So we went to Kickstarter and set out a lofty goal to raise $150,000 of kind of evangelist money and pledges and, you know, without really understanding manufacturing, making a product, making a business, it was an awesome adventure into business to see hey, is this an early adoption idea that people are going to put their money behind? So if you think about it in terms of how many projects go to Kickstarter a year and what the success is in the amount of funds that they raise, we're kind of in a small club in which, even though we didn't hit our raise goal of $150,000, which was kind of a blessing in disguise, we were still above the $100,000 funds raise mark. I think we ended up with $118,000 in funds raised. And so less than 1% of Kickstarter projects actually get that far. So we took the approach of, let's set something that is above what we think we need to get, because usually it takes twice as long and three or four times as much capital as you think to get a product to market. And it couldn't have been a better decision for us to kind of set that lofty goal, especially without any investment capital. At the time, we had no investors. We had a prototype we had, you know, gone to market with that was barely functional. And although the concept worked, we did a lot of things to build kind of a brand around it and make the idea and the story believable, feasible, et cetera. And we're able to convert all of those pre-order followers on our Kickstarter campaign over to our website.
Now, were you able to, at the time, were the Kickstarter rules such that if you didn't hit your $150,000 goal, did you get any of the money?
You get zero money. So
that's what I thought. So you got over 100 grand. Yeah, you got over 100 grand, but your goal is 150, so you got none of it.
Yeah, so it's all or nothing. So
do they give the people their money back when that happens?
Well, they don't really, the money is never taken from them. So essentially, if you think about it, it's a pre-order pledge. And then if you hit your goal, then it gets deducted from kind of their credit card or their payment method or whatever. So we took the approach of, let's see what the press is like. Let's see what the traction is like. At the time, hardware, specifically smart locks, were pretty hot in the marketplace. And we were able to convert all of the pre-order traction over to our website and essentially keep the folks who were still interested in our product on our website and keep their emails and keep in touch with them and get their feedback. And we really didn't turn them into paying customers until kind of last year around the November, December timeframe.
And how many people was that? How many No Kidding emails did you acquire from the Kickstarter campaign?
I think it was a really small amount at that point. I think it was like 300 or 400 people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's maybe in corporate America, that's a small amount for a startup, that's pretty good.
Yeah. If you think about, you know, percentage of conversion and, you know, early adopters, usually people who are early adopters are also evangelists and want to tell their friends about the cool products that they have purchased ahead of everyone else. So 300 or 400 emails was incredible for us. And, the press that we got off of the Kickstarter and the subsequent kind of R&D cycles that we went through landed us on TechCrunch, Forbes, CBS, Popular Mechanics Print, you know, publications that had reached as far as Japan. Japan's version of TechCrunch, I think, featured an article on us. So we had a lot of traction and a lot of interest from customers. But what we took almost 2.5-3 years to do was actually invent something that was manufacturable. So going from an idea on Kickstarter to actually manufacturing something that passes quality control, passes, you know, the manufacturing standards that you set out to, is extremely, extremely difficult. The prototype that we had cost us $3,000, barely functioned, and now we have a fully functional, cost-effective product to sell to customers that we can mass produce that passes the first pass yield standards at our manufacturing facility, and something that we've been shipping at least in our mechanical residential line for the past year, and now finishing up our beta run with our fully connected version here this month and full run production to our customers in kind of the late spring. So we learned a lot. We raised a lot of money, just momentum on, you know, previous kind of growth. So I found the most helpful approach to raising capital, at least for hardware, is that raise the capital for a specific purpose, give investors milestones, show them a plan. Once you pass the milestone, go back to your investors, say, hey, this is the traction progress we've made, would like for you to reinvest and or be evangelist to new investors. And so we kind of grew our business from essentially zero to where we have it now, just by never quitting, always completing the things we said we were going to do with our investors' money, and making smart decisions on who we decide to partner with based on the resources that we had available to us at the time.
Payroll and benefits are hard and not much fun, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. PC Mag, Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. Gusto makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Gusto is reliable. 4 out of 5 customers actually reduce payroll errors after switching to Gusto. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. How often do you actually love your payroll provider? Most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to veteranonthemove.com/gusto. Veterans and families of veterans, if you or a loved one is dealing with depression, anxiety, PTSD, or simply having trouble transitioning back to civilian life, you are not alone. The Stephen A. Cohen Military Family Clinics can help you make it back to better. Cohen Clinics provide counseling for post-9/11 veterans and their families, regardless of discharge status, at no to low cost. Many of the staff are veterans themselves. One retired Army veteran says, "It's a positive thing. It's good for your family, good for your relationships. Everything's made easy. It's life-changing." A Marine Corps wife and caregiver says, "Caring for a combat veteran is tough. I'm back to being myself." Learn more about how Cohen Veterans Network can help you make it back to better at veteranonthemove.com/Cohen. All right, back talking with Alex Bertelli from Havenlock. So, Alex, before we were talking, I know I've seen the Havenlock somewhere before. I've seen like the videos of it working with the door and that kind of thing. Since you mentioned Kickstarter, I think it might have been your Kickstarter campaign back a few years ago that I saw. I'm thinking that's where I'd seen it before. I'm like, you know, 'cause you haven't ever like been on Shark Tank or anything, right?
No, never been on Shark Tank. Okay. Although I think we're getting close to trying to get on. So
okay.
Would love Shark Tank.
'Cause I know I've seen these videos somewhere before. When we started talking about doing an interview and I was looking at your videos, I'm like, okay, I don't remember where I've seen it, but I'm suspecting it might have been the Kickstarter. So let's go back and tell us about where you got the idea for the Havenlock.
Sure. So I first got the idea when I was overseas, being a special operations helicopter pilot. A lot of what our mission entailed was delivering special operations forces to a target area. And a lot of what we did was directly to the X or directly to the target compound. And a couple times, more often than not, the insurgent forces would barricade their doors shut. Sometimes they would weld a metal bar at the bottom, middle, top of the door. Other times they would padlock it shut. Other times they would booby trap it. And so there's a lot of obstacles that our assaulters faced when trying to gain access and entry to those facilities. And one of the most unique kind of interesting things I saw was how these insurgent forces would weld metal bars to the bottom of the door or even the middle of the door and essentially make that a false entry. And what I found particularly interesting when I returned from one of my rotations is that there's some real estate that isn't being used on a door, and it's typically at the bottom or the top of the door. And as I was building a house in Nashville, and my next door neighbor actually had a break-in, and I went to look at his door and kind of looked at how it was constructed, and saw that there was about an inch gap at the bottom of the door, and noticed that while that space wasn't being utilized, the space that was actually protecting the door was about an inch of compressed wood that housed the deadbolt. And The guy broke into my next door neighbor's door and about four kicks went in and stole a TV, some family photos and left. And I really started building the idea around, why don't we build a wedge that's at the bottom of a door that is stronger than the deadbolt and allows the door to kind of act as a stronger kind of barrier, much like I saw what the insurgents were doing overseas. So we kind of built an idea and a concept around that of just a wedge that was encased in a small housing that could be activated manually and electronically. And, you know, from that idea, from just buying a threshold at Lowe's and iterating, designing, testing, and getting customer feedback to where we have a fully manufactured product that does work manually, that does work off of a key fob and does work off of an iPhone or an Android app, was, you know, a significant journey for our company.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm a gadget guy. I love inventing gadgets and solutions to everyday problems. And it's something substantive. You can hold it in your hand. You can look at it. You know, it's not like a concept or an idea. So I love the idea of gadgets and stuff, which is partly why I love selling stuff on Amazon, because I can like come up with an idea and invent it and make it and go sell it. I love that simple concept, especially the concept of somebody in the military took an idea from an experience they had in the military and brought it into the civilian sector. That's the American dream right there, man, if you ask me. So, and especially something, you know, high speed, low drag, like kicking indoors and that kind of thing. I mean, you watch the cop shows on TV and stuff, and they take that bar, or that long tube with handles on it. And it's like, sometimes it's like one pop right there by the lock and the door just pops right open. It's no wonder something like this hasn't been invented a long time ago. So, I mean, good on you for following it through. So I want to hear a little bit about the process you went through trying to get a prototype made. You said it cost like $3,000 and barely worked. What was your experience in lessons learned from getting your first prototype made?
So I think the most important thing first is, before you go out and spend $1 million building something that you think people want, you should test and kind of design around a minimum viable product that you can get feedback on. So even though our first prototype cost $3,000 and was made out of, you know, aerospace grade aluminum and barely worked, what it did do was showed the world our product. We got some traction. We got great feedback, good and bad. And we're able to say, look, I think that there's a business around this that no one has explored before. And so we took kind of all of that package of feedback and built a business around it that we could raise capital off of and patent. And so, you know, just from a longevity standpoint, I think, you know, we have gone through most, if not all, the hardships of a startup, raising a good amount of capital. I think we've raised over $1 million at this point. And, you know, as you get through research and development, especially on a hardware product, there's still capital and funds and resources to be raised as you scale and grow a company. So, going from an idea and not having any capital and signing some strategic partnerships and filing for patents and just saying, hey, I'm going to build this airplane as I fly it, and I'll figure out the capital and resource issues as they present themselves, to evangelizing customers, building a following, building a website and a shopping cart, is just something every single day feels like this is the mission and this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And I think that's what veterans really miss when they get out and get off active duty, is number one, the fellowship and the sense of purpose, and that it's surrounded by, you know, the tasks that they've been trained in. And so entrepreneurship feels like the X to me. This is the target I'm going after. I can build a team around it. I can build motivation and momentum. And after working in the civilian world, and not only the public sector, but also the private sector, as I kind of built my company and went through the lulls of being an entrepreneur, is that nothing ever gave me, besides my job at the state, which I really loved, nothing outside of service that I've ever done has ever felt like my objective, my X, my mission, and except for being an entrepreneur. And so what I would tell other vets who are thinking about becoming their own boss and building their own company is that at the end of the day, you're responsible for finding what your X is in life, what your purpose, what your mission is. And I just never found that working for anyone else in the private sector. And not to say that, you know, I may feel differently about that in the future, but certainly, you know, Night Stalkers don't quit, and I'm never going to give up on this. And this is what I feel like veterans need to do, is focus on entrepreneurship, small business ownership, and building something beyond their service that they can feel satisfied with after 30 years post-military service.
Man, that was a great speech for veterans going into entrepreneurship instead of getting a J-O-B. That's my tagline. So that was awesome. Appreciate that. I can absolutely identify with everything that you said. To me, all the things we've done in the military, granted, it was great and phenomenal thrills, but I have to say there's almost nothing more thrilling than actually making a living off of an idea that you had and came up with on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people say that they appreciate veterans, they want to hire veterans, they love the service. I point to a guy in corporate America who was leading 30 people on a platoon as a 23-year-old. And you can't, I mean, most managers at corporations don't even lead that many people unless they're a, you know, a senior director or a vice president. And mm-hmm. I think things that I just saw through my journey post-military is that people don't know how to give guidance, purpose, task, direction, end state. Like, the five paragraphs of an op order is just lost on people. And so, you know, startup life is about setting an end goal, and then you just literally go from building a strategy and putting out fires left and right to tackle resource problems and tackle manufacturing problems and supply chain and website. And it's very fulfilling at the end of the day. And I think a lot of veterans need to really decide what they want to do with their lives. Do they want to be in a cubicle doing Excel and PowerPoint, or do they want to go to the X and find their new objective?
Yes. And the most dangerous thing for anyone, but we're talking veterans here, the most dangerous thing for any veteran to lose is their sense of purpose. And personally, I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, but all the problems that are out there associated with veterans, suicide included, you can all point it right back to losing their sense of purpose. And there's no better sense of purpose than being an entrepreneur and being on that mission to succeed.
Totally agree. I think, and you know, as I decided to make the leap full time to do my business, and that is exactly what I told my manager, because I had a corporate career for a while, two very, very reputable companies. And I just said, look, this job is great. There's no risk and reward matrix that makes it to where it equals the purpose that I have on my own kind of path. And so I just said, look, there's no purpose in me doing this. And I think that there will be in my own kind of own entrepreneurial ventures. And that's why I made the jump.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes, you know, having had whether it's a 4-year or 30-year career in the military, when you have that transition, whether it's forced or just because it's the end of your service, it is a huge life change. And it's definitely a trigger mechanism for reflection and deep thinking about, okay, what do I really want to do with my life? If I'm really getting out of the military, I want to make this transition into something that means something to me. And if the veteran that gets that hopefully ends up somewhere that is meaningful, that gives them purpose in life. And I think sometimes a lot of folks, that whole concept of transition is missed upon them. You know, it's like, I just need to transition to a different job. It's really more of a transition to a different state of mind. Or, you know, after you've been locked into the military for however many years, you got a chance to make a huge change and also have a chance to get a big chunk of your freedom back. And so what is it you're going to do with that, and where are you going to go?
No, absolutely. And it may be where you need to go into civilian life and spread your wings for a little bit and see what you want to do and what, you know, what you really enjoy before you decide what your next adventure is. But I think the best thing for me was leaving the military, finding something that gave me purpose, working for the state of Tennessee and doing economic development was awesome. It's just something that was really rewarding. But I think what every veteran needs to do, at least junior military officers or guys who are getting out around their pathway point, whether you're enlisted or officer, I don't really think it matters. But I think education is the most, absolutely the most important thing that a vet can do that they should not squander or waste, especially as they grow older. They need to go and either finish up their bachelor's degree or even get their master's degree, because you've got to market yourself to what your prospective employers think is relevant. And, you know, if you want to come out and be an entrepreneur, you don't need even a bachelor's degree to do that. But I think education gives you kind of wisdom beyond your years and allows you to see either, especially the lens of business, through different eyes as you get more educated on marketing and business and strategy and analytics. And it can only help. Like, most veterans leave, they have the GI Bill. Why would you not use that? And so I took advantage of that early on and did 2 years at the University of North Carolina. And then I did an additional year on my own at Penn State, just doing something I was interested in to augment the MBA in case, you know, God forbid something should happen, I should need to go back and work for someone. I've got the education to fall back on, you know, as a check the box kind of thing. And also to help augment my thought process moving forward in my own business.
So Alex, where is Havenlock now? Are you revenue positive? You're selling them. I know you're still looking to scale dramatically with it, but where are you at right now?
Yeah, so we have been revenue positive for about a year. We did several hundred thousand dollars in business last year. A lot of what we were focused on last year was tooling, assembly, mold, and fixture building and kind of assembly line, you know, build out. So we have several awesome partners in the space. Scott Fitzer Electric Group does all of our manufacturing. They're a Berkshire Hathaway subsidiary. They've been with us for 2 years and kind of helped us through the final design for manufacturing process. Our board manufacturer, Futaba, Fortune 500 company, global company, they do all of our board manufacturing. Our software partner, Unikey, former Shark Tank company, does a lot of smart lock and access control kind of in the space. They do the Kevo QuickSet smart lock. So really building up partnerships over the last 3 years and doing the things that we need to do to mass manufacture our product cost effectively has really been our focus. Our focus kind of moving here forward, you know, now is to grow and scale the company and advertise and really kind of understand what our customers have been over the years and see how we can segment advertising and marketing and solve their hair and fire problem. We don't sell shoes. We don't sell watches. We sell a lock that is 10 times stronger than the deadbolt that protects your family and your home. And people, we have found just by doing the analytics and analysis, come to our website because they see our videos. They're engaging. They're interesting. They show people trying to break down the door and, you know, fail at it while they're trying to go against our lock. But more often than not, people search for our products when they have hair on fire. Like my next door neighbor was broken into, or I was broken into. And they're looking for a better solution. And ours is an innovative solution that's a, you know, veteran-owned company, made in America, made in Tennessee. 90% of our product comes right out of Tennessee. And, you know, I think that that's where we're at now, is just telling our story. And we have got something that's not, you know, an idea anymore. It's a physical American-made product that's new and innovative that you can buy today and have delivered and installed tomorrow.
So now that you're on this successful entrepreneurship journey, would you consider yourself unemployable? You know what I mean by that?
In terms of like going back and doing something else with my life, or
yeah, like going, like working for someone else again? Yeah.
I mean, it'd be pretty hard to do that.
I mean, I know most of us would if we really had to, of course, but
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like if you're going to go and take this leap of faith and invest in and believe in yourself and say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to be successful on my own, you can't. I think part of what made me a good soldier and a military officer and a Night Stalker was the fact that I, number one, never quit. And certainly Night Stalkers don't quit was instilled into me at an early age. But the best thing that I think the 160th does over any other organization in the entire military is risk mitigates and comes up with contingency planning to, you know, ensure that there's a course of action for the worst case. And so that all goes back to education. If the world were to implode, Alex Bertelli could go back and get a job because he has his MBA and his bachelor's degree. And, you know, I think that that's an important part of any entrepreneur's journey, especially someone getting out of the military, to get your education under control learn something, have those certificates and skill sets. And it may not be an MBA that is right for every soldier. It could be a hard skill, which I'm totally a fan of. You know, being a welder, being a plumber, being a trade technician, someone who runs automation equipment at a facility, some of those folks make more than executives at companies do. So whether it's a certification or an MBA, I think that's, they need to use that GI Bill, exhaust all of the resources to get their education, and then take a look at what their opportunities are and go attack their next X.
All right. Well said. Well, hey, Alex, we're down to just we're a little bit past time to be exact, but how do we find Havenlock?
You can go to our website. It's www.havenlock.com. That's the best way to kind of see our product, understand it, see its uses. And we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So those are the best places to find us.
Awesome, man. I'll give you the last word. If you're talking to a veteran out there that is looking to transition to entrepreneurship, what kind of advice would you have for him?
Never quit. Ever. Well, never said. Quit. I mean, I could give a whole speech on just using the phrase never quit, but that's not what we do as military leaders, officers, NCOs. We drive to the objective and we never quit. So my parting words of advice would be never quit.
Well said. That's awesome. All right, Alex. Well, thanks for sharing your entrepreneurial success journey. And although you're successful and have been for a year or so, you're at the very beginning, and I hope to see, you know, Havenlock installed in homes and businesses all around the U.S. and the world someday here soon.
Great. Thanks for the time. I really appreciate it.
All right. These two veterans are Oscar Mike. As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.